Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, fastest-growing, and now largest segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they've become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our number, if you would like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-376-45. Well, one battlefield is not enough. The next one is not sufficient. After having been humiliated in Somalia with the harebrained policies of Bill Clinton, where he decided to put U.S. servicemen's lives at risk to feed citizens of other countries and to put their welfare in the hands of the United Nations, and they were slaughtered. You may be familiar with the book and movie Black Hawk Down that speaks of how the Muslim savages there ravaged those that were there to help them. Well, we are not done with Somalia. In Mogadishu last night, Al-Shabaab's top leader was traveling in one of two vehicles that was hit by a U.S. military strike. You see, borders mean nothing to the United States. The whole world is the playground of the U.S. military. U.S. forces attacked the extremist Al-Shabaab. They're not extremists, they're fundamentalist. Network in Somalia Monday, the Pentagon confirmed. Yes, we just love playing war. A witness in Somalia described ground-shaking explosions caused by the strike, which means that there was either a manned aircraft strike dropping many bombs and large bombs, or there was one enormous number of drones, because a missile from one drone isn't going to cause that kind of impression. The African forces heading to the town and the district heard what they said sounded like an earthquake as Al-Shabaab bases were hit. Yes, indeed. It's not just send a drone here and there and hope to get someone that the Obaminator wants to kill. But no, here now we bomb entire bases. Now, I'm not one who would stand up for Al-Shabaab, the lads, as the name means in the native tongue. And they are indeed a terrorist organization, fundamentalist Muslims. They have done nothing but harm their country and the planet. If every Al-Shabaab member was dead tomorrow, it would be a favorable outcome. But this notion that the United States thinks that the world belongs to it and that we ought to eradicate fundamentalist Muslims in Mogadishu, Somalia, but not in Saudi Arabia, where they terrorize women and fund terrorism worldwide, not in Kuwait, not in Pakistan, at least amongst the leaders in Pakistan that actually matter, and that we don't use our drones to annihilate imams, the source of Islamic rage, as opposed to leaders of militant groups. It is a strategy that is not only failing and that we're learning nothing from, but that is causing a far worse outcome that wouldn't have occurred if we had never flown a single drone over an Islamic country. All of the testimony that emerges from these countries affirms what I've said since the first drone strike flown by George Bush, that we manufacture, we create, we inspire 100 jihadists for everyone we kill. It is a substantial reason that Muslims want the United States destroyed and celebrate when we are terrorized. This was stupid. Speaking of stupid, I'd like to continue the story that we were considering yesterday. The New York Times, during the period that The Abominator was luxuriating in the playground of the rich and powerful in Hyannisport, continued to write. And they, after they said that our goal should be different, not to punish Assad's government, and that was evidently the Abominator's motivation. His previous strategy was to punish Mr. Assad. Oh, I'm the great father. Get over my knee and I will spank you. We will punish him for bad behavior. So when is someone going to punish the American political leadership? And it's the United States that has been the most deadly country in the world over the last 20 years, maybe even over the last 50 or 60 years. And the only countries that can claim since the period around World War II to have killed more would be China with the famine of Mao Zedong, but we empowered him, and Stalin with the great purges that may have killed 20 million in Russia, maybe 30 million. But we empowered him. And since that time, there's been no one to compete with the United States in terms of carnage, punishing a world leader. Who do we think we are? Or to further ouster him, or to cripple the very people we have armed to topple him. As it happens, that would actually work in Mr. Assad's favor if America were to tend to cripple the Islamic State. The New York Times journalist writes, as if writing to people who were incapable of putting those things together. Since the Islamic State has been the most effective of the various factions fighting the Syrian government forces. That's a fairly recent phenomenon. Al-Nusra was the most effective overwhelmingly for the first 3 years of this war. It is only in the last 4 months that the Islamic State has become more effective. There hasn't, in fact, you go back 2 years ago, and it was probably in the range of 100-1 in effectiveness in favor of al-Nusra. And only quite recently, the Islamic State. And the reason I suspect that is so is twofold. One is that Qatar, which is the primary gunrunner to both al-Nusra and the Islamic State, must have decided that it was appropriate to provide a larger percentage of the overall weaponry to the Islamic State, vis-a-vis al-Nusra. The other reason, potentially, and it is, I think, considerably more likely, is that the awakening program in Iraq, where Americans provided weapons to Sunni warlords with this stupid notion that they would go off and hunt down al-Qaeda in Iraq, which, of course, was ludicrous, that with those weapons, they joined the Islamic State. And when those Sunnis, in significant numbers under a power-sharing arrangement, joined the Islamic State, they were so vastly superior to al-Nusra, crossing a non-existent border, that they became dominant almost overnight. As it happens, this article continues, that it might be directly in the interest of the United States, given the threat posed by the Islamic State, who brutally captured and videotaped the image of a masked man beheading Mr. Foley. Now, the New York Times journalist, and as a publication, ought to have been more disciplined in its story writing. There is no video image of a masked man beheading Mr. Foley. There's a video of two masked men at different times standing behind Foley, one of which is holding a knife in his inoperative hand. He's a right-handed individual holding a knife in his left hand. And the knife never so much as touches Foley's neck. Fade to black. He's not shown beheading Mr. Foley, and they know it. But now, here is the United States, according to the New York Times, deciding that it's appropriate to benefit Assad, who the United States has wanted deposed and destroyed at any cost, willing to use the U.S. military back a year or so ago to bomb Assad into oblivion. And now wanting to go to his aid to destroy the Islamic State, whom the United States has armed directly and indirectly and used as an ally for the purpose of taking Assad out of power. And now we're going to go and drop bombs on them because they're alleged to have killed one American journalist? Wow. The justification for war isn't much these days. And that tells you that when a fake video justifies engaging in a new war, that the country, its leadership, was looking for war all the time. It was simply an excuse. It reminds me of World War I, where the Wilson administration had decided it was going to go to war and just looked for an excuse and set the Lusitania on a collision course to provide that excuse. How the United States wanted to go to war to become a capitalist nation against Spain and sunk the Maine to facilitate that goal. How the Kennedy and Johnson administration wanted to be a wartime president. And as such, engaged a lie. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, where it was reported that the North Vietnamese had attacked an American warship. Also that Johnson could be a wartime president. And even after that, George Bush imagines a mighty foe called Al-Qaeda and then weapons of mass destruction and uses those excuses to do what he wanted, which is to commit America to war so he could be the commander-in-chief. The New York Times article concludes with these thoughts. That's giving this rhetoric credit as being the product of thinking. This is a quote from Frederick Hoff, a former Syria advisor in Mr. Obama's State Department. Oh, wonderful. Given what's happened to Jim Foley, given the public profile that this Islamic State bunch has taken, I think it's easier for the president, and for that matter for members of Congress, to make the case to the public that the United States really ought to be operating in the skies over Syria against this particular group. Great. So somebody produces a fake video of a beheading, and that's sufficient in this day and age to have idiots in Congress and the White House justify the unjustifiable and to start dropping bombs in a whole new country. Not recognizing that dropping bombs has only made every place that we have dropped those bombs worse. They have a tendency to break things and kill people. And even in Vietnam, where vast stretches of jungle laid out before the eyes of the pilots, they make people mad. Yeah, there's this direct connection between bombing people and having them hate you. Why don't we ever think about that? American officials have long worried about the dangers from Westerners fighting in Syria, including about 100 Americans returning home to carry out attacks here. Now, why would they do that? I thought they were all freedom fighters. They're moderates going after democracy. That's what Senator John McClown tells us. So since America is supplying their weapons, why on earth would anyone think that these upstanding religious boys would come back to America who supplied the weapons to help them overturn the fascist government of Assad and then terrorize America. Is there something here that we're missing? Is there an 800-pound elephant in the room? The fact that Syria is nothing, it has nothing to do with a political opponent. It's not a political civil war. It's not being fought by moderates, Democrats, freedom fighters. It's being waged by Muslims. It is their desire to die killing others that causes them to want to go there. And should they survive, should they fail to achieve their martyrdom status, then they will have to seek that status here. Why is it that the New York Times can't make that connection? It went on to say, as of this spring, the intelligence community concluded that the Islamic State did not yet have the capability to strike here. They don't. So why should we go bomb them? They just don't. They're not the big boogeyman that is ready to topple Americans' buildings. The fact is, there will be more strikes in America, and they'll be celebrated by the Islamic State. Some of them might even have Islamic terrorists associated with the Islamic State participating in them. But the Islamic State will be irrelevant to them. The only thing that will matter is Islam. Slight departure, and we're going to return to the situation in Syria. Reuters is reporting that Pakistani soldiers and paramilitary forces had to act in a near coup to secure the state's television headquarters in Islamabad after those that are loyal to what's called the firebrand, that would mean fundamentalist, Muslim cleric Tahir ul Qadri, took to the streets and confiscated, took control of the one state-sponsored, the only news channel in Pakistan. And so it was the military that had to respond to the political and religious protest. These protests have descended into deadly chaos over the weekend, with demonstrators clashing with police and with the military around government buildings and embassies. It's turning out to be quite the mess in Pakistan. The fall of the Pakistani government to fundamentalist Muslims, to Islamic terrorists, is certain. I can't tell you if it will happen this year, which is unlikely, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now. But within 15 years, I can tell you for certain, Pakistan will be controlled by the Taliban. This story is from also the Washington Post. It says that politicians and pundits on the right initially rallied around the idea that the U.S. needs to more aggressively engage militarily in Iraq and Syria to defeat the Islamic State, which is wreaking havoc there. Now, I would ask you this question. We, the United States, engaged about as aggressively as a country can engage in Iraq. We bombed the living tar out of Iraq. We bombed Iraq back to the Stone Age. We left Iraq so badly broken that it was in pieces. And now that those pieces are showing no affinity for one another and are at war with one another, as could be imagined, with the Christians being annihilated, the Zoroastrians being humiliated, the Kurds striking their own independent country with American weapons, and the Sunnis and Shiites at each other's throat with no hope of solution. The Republicans on Capitol Hill think that the solution is to re-engage militarily in Iraq. the country that we broke into these pieces, and that by, what, bombing them some more, these pieces will magically align, and there'll be this great love fest, that nothing glues people together more than 500-pound bombs? And then just to demonstrate that the world is America's to control, we're going to wreak havoc in Syria, too. Do I have that right, Republicans in Capitol Hill? That's your plan? Let's bomb some more? In fact, let's not just start bombing again in Syria or in Iraq. Let's start bombing in Syria. And as a matter of fact, let's tell the American people that we're going to use the American military to bomb weapons that were originally designated for the American military that we gave to the people that we are now bombing. Let's tell them how smart we are. Why don't we do that? Why don't we tell them that the Petraeus plan promoted by George Bush that was called the Awakening Program during the surge, whereby we weaponized the Sunnis under the ruse that they would hold Al-Qaeda, which didn't ever exist in Iraq, under check, is now unified with the Islamic State to become one political and religious entity. Why don't we tell them that it's because we invaded Iraq that the Islamic State exists? Confession would be good for the soul if the country had one. But in the wake of President Obama's remark last week that we don't have a strategy yet, there's a new twist with some Republicans saying that this deliberative approach to forming an Islamic State strategy may have some validity to it. Oh, no, don't tell me that we want to develop a strategy before we strike. Why would we want to do that? I do think it's important that we not treat them as though they were 10 feet tall. The Washington Institute's Michael Singh said on CBS News, Face the Nation, in response to the question about whether there's been an overestimation of the Islamic State's direct threat to the United States. This is a threat that if we have the will, if we decide to do it, I think we can address that, Singh, whose background includes a stint as the National Security Council advisor under President George W. Bush that got us into this mess. So what you're saying is they're not 10 feet tall, so they're really not a threat to the United States. But because they're not a threat to the United States, we should go attack them because, well, we can. Why have a military if you're not going to use it? Is that your strategy? Is that the same strategy that you gave to your former boss, which is why he invaded Iraq in a suicidal mission, making a bad situation worse, making America more vulnerable? Is that why you advised him to invade Afghanistan, breaking that country, making America more vulnerable in the process? They're not 10 feet tall, so they're not a threat to the United States. So let's go bomb them. Great. And you get paid for your advice. And CBS News wants to hear what you have to say. This, I bet you have a nice suit and look good on television. The success of U.S. airstrikes in helping to recapture the Mosul Dam and a besieged Shiite Turkmen town from the Islamic State help, quote, demonstrate that this is a group with vulnerabilities. If we do get the right strategy, that we'll be able to take them on, Singh said. The strategy of bombing the area around the Mosul Dam was brain dead. We talked about it yesterday. There was absolutely no harm in having the Islamic State control that dam. The only affected people, should they have destroyed the dam and taken it offline, would be in Mosul, a town that they not only control, but have a disproportionate amount of their operatives and their wealth. That town is has all the electricity that it needs, all the water that it needs. Supermarket shelves are filled. The people are going about their lives. There was a 0% possibility that the Islamic State was going to destroy that dam, and any rational person knew it. And putting the dam in the hands of the Kurds, who hate the inhabitants of Mosul because they're Arab Muslims and have for centuries abused them, puts Mosul in a vastly more vulnerable position. What it did is to demonstrate the stupidity of America's military. That's all it demonstrated. And by the way, what you don't read in the press is that over the last 2 weeks that America has been bombing the Islamic State, they have succeeded in capturing a huge military base in Syria. They've successfully engaged with Nusra to capture areas around the Golan. And that there are two communities, two towns in western Iraq that have now fallen to them. It hasn't weakened them. It has made them stronger. It has made them more successful. And that's part of the, you know, the mouse that roared strategy. If you can get the biggest, baddest country in the world that people all around the world despise, the United States, to make you its enemy and to deploy its military against you, you all of a sudden gain enormous sympathies around the world and become very important. So a entity that is relatively meaningless becomes the most important in the world just by enticing the United States to go to war against it. Seeing you're not a very bright man, are you? James Jeffrey, who was a deputy national security advisor to George W. Bush, these guys just never get out of the business, do they? Yeah, just move from one guy to another to a consulting firm. And an ambassador to Iraq under Obama echoed the idea that the president's plan to carry out airstrikes against the Islamic State, announced in June, does not constitute a strategy, and that Mr. Obama was carrying it out not too badly. Not too badly. Okay, so when he says that the announcement to bomb is not a strategy, I disagree. It is a strategy. It's a stupid one. And then he says he's carrying it out not too badly. What does that mean? No wonder this man appealed to both administrations. No one can understand anything he says. The problem that we have is that we have a president who does not understand that saying we do not have a strategy sends chills down the spine of everyone in the world. Oh, this is James Jeffrey, who Obama appointed to be the ambassador of Iraq. And so he's now taking a shot at Obama by saying the problem is not Islam, mind you. The problem isn't that we invaded Iraq and broke it, mind you. The problem isn't that the enemy here is being called extremists, radicals, and terrorists as opposed to Muslims. That the problem isn't that we've used our military consistently to achieve a inferior result. The problem is that the president doesn't realize that by saying we don't have a strategy causes everyone in the world to be afraid. No, sir. No. You are really stupid. James Jeffrey. First of all, very few people around the world are afraid of the United States. We're a laughingstock. We're a laughingstock because of the stupid things we have done while you have been in charge. No one fears the United States. The Islamic community, particularly the Islamic State, wants the United States to engage. No one fears the U.S. anymore. China doesn't fear the United States. Russia despises the United States. We're a laughingstock around the world. And everyone knows that America doesn't have a sane strategy. Our strategy in Korea was a disaster. Our strategy in Vietnam was a disaster. Our strategy in South America won us no friends and only enemies. Our strategy in the war against drug has proven to be an unmitigated disaster. Our strategy in energy, which is the most important strategy in the world, has been a complete failure. Our strategy in Afghanistan made a bad situation worse. Our strategy in Iraq led to the mess that we are now dealing with. Every strategy that America has deployed has failed, has blown up in our face. And so for America to actually say we don't have a strategy is obvious. We haven't had a clue in many, many decades. We don't have a strategy. And there isn't one. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. The president said last week that we don't have a strategy yet. And as we begin to survey the responses to that, we find really morons like James Jeffrey, who was ambassador to Iraq under Obama. Little wonder that Iraq is so broken. And a national security advisor to George W. Bush, which probably justifies or explains the reason that we broke Iraq in the first place. Now saying that by admitting that we do not have a strategy, that we are somehow terrorizing the world, that the whole world is shaking in their boots now because the President of the United States says we don't have a strategy. It's obvious. Washington hasn't had a strategy for a very long time. We don't have a strategy as to how to deal with the debt, to resolve our delinquencies in education, where we're raising generations that are incapable of thinking, that we don't have a strategy on how to deploy our military. We don't have a strategy of how to work with and cooperate with the rest of the world. America doesn't have a clue. We are absolutely a country without any oars in the water, bobbing around on a turbulent sea, without direction or any inspiration. Jeffries was critical of the Democrats who say that the U.S. should wait until there is a solid coalition in place, arguing that it would only happen with robust U.S. action. He said, if we don't lead and really lead hard, I don't know how you lead hard, we're not going to get a coalition. What we have to do is to get on with the work. And when we do get on with the work, it starts working for us. Boy, this guy, I want to tell you, don't get a coalition because, frankly, we can't get a coalition because we haven't had a strategy that worked in so long that nobody in their right mind wants to coalesce with the United States. But don't worry about that. Just hit hard. Shock and awe. Show them what you got. Bomb, kill, destroy, lead hard, and the rest of the world will follow. No, it says, and when you do get on with the work, it starts working for us. When does it start working for us? Did it work for us in Korea? When did it start working for us in Vietnam? When did it start working for us in Afghanistan? We hit hard enough there. We certainly, with shock and awe, twice hit in Iraq. Why is it not working for us? You idiot. CNN is affirming that now the cancer word is being used by three Washington operatives to describe the Islamic State. First, it was called a cancer by the President of the United States. Then it was called a cancer by Secretary of State John Kerry. And now it's being called a cancer by Senator John McClown. John Kerry, Lurch, said over the weekend that ISIS is a cancer that must be stamped out. You know, you don't stamp out cancers. You know, that's the interesting thing about cancer. It's a normal cell, except that it replicates more rapidly than do other cells. And when you look at Islam and Islamic jihadism throughout the Middle East, the jihadists are just ordinary Muslims. But they are replicating more rapidly now. Now, it's interesting, too, that the most effective cancer treatment is still poison, chemotherapy. It's a derivative of mustard gas. It kills every cell in the body, but it's more lethal to those cells that are the most vulnerable. And because cancer cells are slightly hypoxic because they grow so rapidly that the blood vessels get constrained, the cancer is slightly more susceptible to the chemical attack on it. But I thought we weren't into chemical agents. Cancer, huh? Maybe it's an apt description of jihadists. The fact that they're ordinary Muslims, but they certainly are growing more rapidly than any other Muslims throughout the Middle East. Maybe we should look at what's causing them to grow so rapidly, as opposed to trying to stomp on them.